Good afternoon, gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I'm your host, Nicholas Lorimer, and today I'm joined by Michael Morris. Let's get into our first news story of today. And today we're talking a lot about South African institutions and crime. All three stories of ours have a strong connection to those themes. The first one is the police minister warning that South Africa could become a gangster state. The next is that residents in parts of Cape Town and in Hanover Park taken to the streets threatening to kill drug dealing gangsters in their neighborhood. And we've got a story about South Africa's potential oil and gas wealth. But let's get into the first one. So the police minister, Feroz Khatralia, who has been appointed as the previous one is on suspension, on the sense of Matuno is on suspension because of his alleged ties to organized crime. Police Minister Feroz Khatralia says that South Africa risked becoming the next Colombia or Ecuador should government authorities fail to roll back the tide and reform anti-corruption institutions into more effective entities. In an interview on the sidelines of the Katlego Mutlanda Foundation Forum, Khatralia said that patterns of criminality in the country had evolved with the emergence of cartels and criminal business enterprises in areas everywhere from kidnapping to extortion, construction, drug dealing, and gangs. He said, quote, "Some of these cartels are infiltrating government institutions. So take Kat Matala, for example. He and his co-conspirators were able to infiltrate procurement systems in a variety of institutions. There are also clearly links with political leaders. While corruption, which involved the abuse of public power and organized crime, exists separately, increasingly they are connected, which makes this a threat to national security." Khatralia said that he's looking to implement reforms and that there are recommendations that will be soon provided, which will include the creation of an Office of Public Integrity, which is a constitutionally independent body that would have the power to investigate systemic corruption. This is a proposal. It's not actually been agreed to, that's likely to come down the pipe. So, Michael, I think this is very good. I think this is actually one of the benefits of having Feroz Khatralia, who is a guy who's, I would say, definitely kind of in the ANC's universe, but not sort of a party, not like kind of connected to the you know, day-to-day politicking that most ANC politicians are. And as a result, he's able to say things like this. And this is very true. This is a major threat to South Africa now, that South Africa is in danger of being captured essentially by organized crime. What's your take on this?
Yes, I think you're absolutely right. Both the significance of what he is saying, but also who he is, and that has, you know, in a sense, unwittingly provided him the opportunity to say things which might not have been, we might not have heard had a minister in tune, the suspended minister, been replaced by somebody from within the ranks. And that's, you know, an illustration of, in a way, another kind of pathology that we're having to deal with is the infusion of party interests within the state, and people not being willing to say unpopular things and being very conscious of not of the risks of stepping out of line, not towing the line, being the kind of party ally at all times. So here we have a very important things being said by Feroz Khatralia. The you know, everything will depend on how our state institutions take on this warning, how they respond to this. I'm immediately reminded of the last major piece that came from Paul Hoffman of Accountability Now, which we used on the Daily Friend, I think just the beginning of this month, 1st of October, in which he emphasized this really fundamental thing, that the requirement of a completely independent scorpions-like body, which was, it was disbanded by the ANC or by the government, but at the behest of the ANC, it was becoming a very discomforting presence in the political universe, and so they got rid of it. And Paul is saying, you know, this is a legislative requirement. It's a legislative challenge. It's the legislators who've got to do this. It's got to be completely out outside the executive and the purview of party and presidency and so on. It's got to be seen to be completely independent in order to be able to act independently and to really tackle corruption. So whether, you know, I don't really know enough about the certainly very welcome recommendation from the minister that we have an Office of Public Integrity. It said here, the story says it'll be constitutionally fully independent. We can't risk having anything that is in any way compromised by association with the ANC or association with the executive. It really must be independent. And so I think Paul is right. It really is something that MPs have got to acknowledge that it's their job to set this up. The DA has put forward legislation to do exactly this thing. They have a private members bill. And it's really got to be taken seriously. This is not some puny sort of party political stunt. It really cuts to the heart of exactly what Kachali is saying, and how very worrying. I mean, and don't we know this? We've seen the lawyer who is involved in liquidation being actually assassinated in his own boardroom. We had the two. I forget what they called, also in the sort of liquidation, but, you know, dealing with difficult cases that are controversial, with all sorts of controversial people involved, being shot and killed on a freeway. One thing after the next, the penetration of the criminal activity into our institutions is advancing. And unless it's stopped, unless it's checked, unless they're people understand that there are immediate consequences for being in any way involved in this kind of thing, it is really just going to get worse. And we'll become a society that is run by, you know, syndicates and sort of criminal elites who assume a power because it's there for them to take. And that really is a big risk.
So a couple things on this. Firstly, I did interview last year Paul Hoffman in December about that private members bill and about this idea of an independent corruption investigation. So you can search for that. The title is Daily Friend Special, Securing the Tools to Defeat Corruption, an interview with Paul Hoffman. I just want to say that this is not completely separate from policy. And I think that's the thing that might be lost in some of the public discussion on this kind of thing. Is that when you have policy that firstly, like cadre deployment, where you say we're going to place people in positions in government, in society, in business, who are loyal to the ANC, which is the ANC's official policy, cadre deployment, that you distort merit and you create reasons other than sort of competence for people being placed into positions. And that means, firstly, that, you know, you're just going to get people who aren't able to do the job. But it also means that if criminal elements infiltrate, say, the ANC, they can get themselves placed into positions of influence and power. And it becomes an incentive for them to do that because there's access to all these resources. So why wouldn't you do that? Also, when you have a very interventionist state that makes decisions, lots of economic decisions, spends lots of money, decides who can have a business, decides who can't have a business, that kind of thing, you raise the stakes for economic extractors to seize control of the state. If the state kind of has a little bit more of a laissez-faire response, if it's just kind of willing to make fewer decisions about economics, there's not nearly as much value in criminal elements actually capturing the state because, you know, it doesn't give them that much power. But with all the procurement budgets that can be robbed, with all of the licensing and spending and approvals that need to be done, there's a really strong incentive for criminal elements to capture the government. And unfortunately, that's what we're seeing. And indeed, you know, Feroz Khachalia raising this alarm now is good, but it's a bit late. We know already that there are significant infiltrations of criminal elements into many layers of our state. In fact, that's what the Matlanga Commission is about, that's going on right now. It's a belated recognition that this has reached absolute crisis levels. And, you know, once states get kind of taken over by, you know, shadow mafias, it's very difficult to get them out, even if you have changes in political power, just because those guys will threaten to murder anyone who actually tries to reform things for the good. Then, of course, you also have policies like BEE, which contribute to this by kind of creating this sort of shadow network of companies who aren't necessarily the best service provider, but they're there to, you know, meet racial targets, but then actually they're just a cover for sort of organized crime. And I think I've mentioned it a couple of times the past couple of episodes, but this book that's recently come out from investigative journalist Jeff Wicks about the Babita Diakran murder kind of lays out exactly how those systems work, is that you have all these fake, small, politically connected companies, which are run by a relatively small group of people that just keep getting procurement contracts. So they act as middlemen, selling to government institutions, in this case, a hospital, from normal. They basically buy stuff, mark it up massively, and then sell it to the institutions. So, you know, changing the policy will also go a long way to actually solving these problems. It's not just about strengthening the institutions and, you know, having these independent bodies to arrest people and actually prosecute and investigate, although that's vital. You also need that. It's also about not creating a state which incentivizes criminal elements to capture it. Any thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, you know, you're mentioning the policy terrain and the criminal terrain. These two were brought together very pointedly by no less a figure than Judge Zondo in his report based on a very extensive commission, where he specifically raises the issue of BE points and procurement premiums in relation to the capacity that these things have for stimulating yet further corruption and for obscuring the public interest. And as you say, one of the big risks is people in senior positions understanding or appreciating that their best interests are served by their fealty not to the public interest, but to the party in power, and these things are they converge in things like the Zondo Commission and now the Matlange Commission. So these also underscore the very great importance of there being consequences, there being results, and there being some kind of definitive outcome. We haven't seen that to nearly a satisfactory degree with the Zondo Commission. I'm sure he has been frustrated by it. He's spoken publicly about it, I think, earlier this year. If the public is not convinced that things are changing, things are improving, it has a very, very deleterious effect. And we're going to get to a very particular story, a very particular case of this, a very good illustration of it. So very important that Feroz Khachalia is highlighting this. Now we need to see what's going to be done. I mean, we spend a lot of time in this country talking about our problems. We want to talk about solutions. That's really where the focus should lie.
No, 100%. And you know, this is also, I think this is, we're talking about really the blueprint for a future government to actually look at. You need these independent bodies that will properly prosecute things, that will hold people to account, that create those consequences that you mentioned. And on the other hand, you've got to also just make the system less juicy for capture by criminal elements, and less conducive to capture by criminals. Okay, and on that point you were making about what happens when people don't see action, well, here's a little story from Ground Up, where there was a protest by hundreds of people in Hanover Park in the Western Cape. It opens with a quote, "Tell your people, the children that are being shot, it must come to an end." This was said by a woman in a part of a group of hundreds who was marching in Hanover Park, who went to the houses of alleged gangsters and threatened essentially to kill them if they didn't stop the incredible violence that has been going on in that community. There have been children shot recently and an enormous number of murders, and people are very angry. Hundreds of Hanover Park residents marched to the homes of alleged drug dealers and gangsters on Sunday afternoon. This march was organized by Picard G-Force. There was lots of police presence. Protesters moved from one home to the next, chanting, "One gangster, one bullet, and death to the merchants, death to the mongrels." People went outside the home of a gangster who allegedly belongs to the Incredibly Gifted Bastards, which is a great name for a gang, I must say, saying, "We are here with a message. tell your people the children are being shot. It must come to an end. This is your final and last warning. Your brother is already in the ground. Your brother is dead from shooting children. A member of the march said that police and counselors are doing nothing, that shootings in the community are constant, and it isn't safe for children to walk to school or play outside, that the community needs to stand up. Quote, sitting at home is not going to benefit you. We all have to rise to the occasion. Are we going to forever live in fear? The Pakhad G4 secretary said the community had asked them to assist because they don't have anyone else to turn to. Quote, we've had enough and they need to step up because it can't go on like this. Our innocent kids can't be killed. And Michael, this is very, very understandable. I mean, you know, with this incredible level of violence, with the fact that the police are as dysfunctional as we know they are, and under-resourced as we know they are, the fact that people just feel like their communities are just being completely dominated by violence, crime, drugs, children being shot in crossfire, murders taking place all the time. This rage comes from a very real and desperate place. And yet I fear that this is really not going to help. Let's say they killed all the gangsters. Well, very quickly, I mean, assuming they got all the right people, which often turns out to not be the case. If you don't have proper institutions that can follow the rule of law, that properly, you know, carry out investigations, imprisonment, that kind of consequence, all you do is establish a new gang. And maybe this gang works differently. Maybe it's not selling drugs. Maybe it's doing extortion. Maybe it's blackmail, whatever it is. But, you know, you just create new gangs to rule, to fill that vacuum. That vacuum can only be filled by actual working, properly run police institutions. What's your take?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we often talk about, it's very much part of our argument that there needs to be decentralization, bring government close to the people and all these things, which I think are very good. But nevertheless, I've often felt that a strong center is absolutely vital to the institutional integrity of the entire enterprise. You've got to be able to have an organization under Feroz Khachalia, which is committed to excellent intelligence, excellent crime prevention, excellent activity, arrests, efficient policing, and so on. And it's got to come from the center. You can have these pockets of excellence all over the place, but unless you've got a really core center, I often think of Yeats's poem, you know, things fall apart, the center cannot hold. There's a reason for that. You know, the center really is. And if you look at a book that I usually admire, Why Nations Fail, those two economists talk constantly about the importance of strong central authorities that are capable of protecting property, essentially, and institutional integrity. And if you don't have those two things, then the center really does. Things do fall apart, and the center can't really hold. So I think what you have here is the on the ground, that dreadful phrase, grassroots manifestation of exactly what Feroz Khachalia was talking about. He was speaking about it in some grand event, and then speaking about it in more kind of global terms. Right down on the ground, you have ordinary people who feel as though they're acting in a vacuum. They feel as though they need to take action to protect themselves and their children because nobody else is. The people who they hope to turn to, and this woman, I see her name, she shares a surname with me, Patricia Morris is her name, I believe. The activist who's quoted here says police and councillors are doing nothing. So, I mean, there's a bit of pressure here on the DA in the city also. This is not a bad thing. Whether the councillors really have the scope to do anything like the police should be able to do is another question. But nevertheless, if that's the sentiment among people, that's what you've got to deal with. And it is very worrying. I think you're quite right, Nicholas, to point out the likely pitfalls of allowing the rule of law to become privatized in a sense, outsourced to vigorous and armed groupings, militia, vigilantes and so on. We had an episode with Pagad for several years in the 90s, which was absolutely awful. And it really, really did undermine so much of this kind of fabric of what the rule of law should be, and a great cost to many people. So that's not a route to go down. We really don't want to outsource the role of an effective state in policing society and making sure that private property is protected. And it's a very worrying thing. It's a very worrying thing when, and it does become appealing. You know, it does become appealing because it looks as if you're getting results quickly. They speak straight to the heart of the matter. One gangster, one bullet. Nobody in those communities who are really suffering wants to hear, you know, dare I say it, kind of liberal sounding ideas about protecting the rights of everybody and rule of law and so on. They are important, and we must keep making that argument. But in the community itself, one understands that people have gone beyond that. They want a result, and whoever comes along and gives them that result is going to get support and going to be given the space to act, and that becomes dangerous. I think that's exactly, and that ironically is another aspect of what Feroz Khachaly is referring to or is warned about. Yeah,
no, it is worrying stuff. And as you say, you know, we've had Bakad as you were telling me. I mean, I was too young at the time, but you were a journalist during the 90s when Bakad was in its heyday. Yeah. And, you know, initially people were pretty optimistic about it because, you know, here were people taking action against crime in their communities, and that seems, you know, like a good thing. And sometimes it is. Yeah. But if it isn't properly managed, it can very quickly turn into something that isn't such a good thing. As you say, you know, there were bombings carried out, there were murders, and it became a sort of completely out of control situation that didn't actually solve any of the problems. I mean, after all, we're still sitting with the gangsterism today. If anything, it's worse. So yeah, a really real consequence of institutional decay here. Yeah. And exactly why, you know, we need things to be fixed. I mean, if the Western Cape had its own proper police force that it could use to deal with these crimes, that could specialize in gangs, that would also help too. But also having a good national police force with proper crime intelligence and stuff would also help. Last point, this may not seem like it's connected, but it actually is. So there's a new study that's come out from a energy advocacy group, lobbying group in the US called the NGO Alliance. They're a Texas-based trade alliance for the energy geoscience industry, with members in more than 50 countries. And they've put out a report talking about the potential benefits that South Africa could have if it develops its oil and gas resources. There is quite a lot of well-founded speculation that there are significant oil and gas reserves in and around South Africa, you know, possibly in parts of our territory, but also especially offshore. And there's been a whole bunch of oil discovered in Namibia recently, the geological feature in which that those resources were discovered stretches down into South African territory as well. So it's very possible that we could also be sitting on an enormous amount of hydrocarbons. The study found that the geological continuity between Namibia and South Africa presents a unique opportunity for South Africa to de-risk its own upstream development, optimize its policy framework, and position itself to maximize the economic benefits of development of the upstream oil and gas industry. By analyzing Namibia's trajectory, South Africa can learn valuable lessons and create a competitive investment environment. The establishment of a regional hub in South Africa can provide a strategic opportunity for the country to derive economic value from the Namibian boom, regardless of the ultimate size of its own discoveries, says the report. It also goes on to talk about how if recent finds in Namibia prove to be commercially valuable, Namibia could become a top 15 global oil producer by 2023. And the Standard Bank CEO, Sim Tshabalala, said that growth in Namibia could reach 7% from around 2030. Now, when your economy is growing at 7%, it doubles basically every 10 years, which is an incredible amount of economic growth. I think the only country in the world currently approaching that is India. Which is, you know, sort of around 6.8 economic growth. So lots of potential upside. And I think this is all correct. I mean, obviously, a lobbying firm for oil and gas is going to say you should build oil and gas stuff. I mean, that's not terribly surprising, but it doesn't mean they're wrong. Here's the problem. One, currently our policy framework is extremely restrictive. You're not going to get investment because you have to give, you know, significant chunks of your company away to BE equity partners before you can even really kind of get started. There's all these regulatory constraints. You have to fight with a lot of environmental legislation and judges, as happened with Total Energy when they tried to look for resources off our coast here. They got struck down in court for not having a comprehensive enough environment impact study. So there's lots of regulatory and policy hurdles. But here's how it connects to our previous two stories. Let's assume that we did get an oil and gas industry working properly and one that was firing on all cylinders and giving us huge amounts of income. Would we look like Norway with its sovereign wealth fund? Probably not. Because of the incredible capture of state institutions by criminal elements, I suspect we'd look far more like Equatorial Guinea. Michael, what's your take on all of this?
I'm not sure whether Botswana law is still the same, but Botswana always stood out as a case apart when it came to its mining law, its approach to mining investors. And I think the two basic requirements were that you could actually do the job, you could dig a mine, and B, that you had the money to do it. And if you could meet those two requirements, you were pretty much assured of a kind of go ahead. As I say, things have changed a little bit, but Botswana, I'm not sure if that's still the case. But that really represents what where the potential for a society, for a whole country lies, is just that leap of imagination in allowing the private sector to simply succeed. Because every case study around the world shows that when you do that, the most people you can expect will benefit from whatever development occurs. The reverse, of course, is also true, as you warned. You know, if institutions are not inclusive, not open, and are exposed to corruption, exposed to all the things that we know are part of our pathology over the past 30 years, especially the past 15, then you're looking at risks. You're looking at, you know, the well-connected getting sweet deals, you're getting the crony capitalists, you're getting the cadres all coming in and sort of feeding at the trough, and none of the development being really of any major economic significance to the bulk of the society, and perhaps even just making things worse, further enmeshing the country in the precisely the pathologies that have got us to this tricky state we're in now. So yeah, it is a worry. It looks very appealing. You know, we have this kind of great wealth that we can exploit, but without the institutional fabric to manage that or to place it in a sound economic context and sustain it in that sound economic context, it's very likely that it'll be actually be a penalty more than a benefit.
Yeah, you know, having all that government revenue just means that the potential pool to be stolen is higher, and you can see that in places like Nigeria, where you have kind of provincial governors who live in incredible luxury, while ordinary people have really low standards of living, and you don't have a lot of economic growth and development, and infrastructure is falling apart, that kind of thing. So it's key that we have those working institutions first, and then we can take advantage of our resources. We can take advantage of our huge mining endowments. We can take advantage of any potential oil and gas we have in our country. We can take advantage of our sunshine for solar power. We can take advantage of uranium for nuclear. We can take advantage of all the good stuff we have, and we have an enormous amount of resources. We just need the institutions to work, and then those things can start providing the wealth and prosperity that will lift millions out of poverty. It's really that simple at the end of the day. Okay, that's all time we have for today. thank you very much for listening. We will see you all tomorrow on the Daily Friend Show. Cheers, everyone, and have a great day.
The Daily Friend Show and the Daily Friend are a project of the Institute of Race Relations, the IRR. The IRR is a think tank which was founded in 1929 to study race relations in South Africa and works to change government policy to improve race relations through non-racialism and to ensure the prosperity of all South Africans. If you like our work and would like to support us, please go to irr.org.za and click Support the IRR. Or you can go to thedailyfriend.co.za and click the Fund Us button.